Hello, this is Wallace Kleindienst, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, and welcome to American History. We continue to read from The American Story, Conversations with Master Historians, host of Bloomberg TV's David Rubenstein Show. David Rubenstein captures the brilliance of our most celebrated historians, as well as the souls of their subjects. Last week, we began the conversation with historian H.W. Brands about President Ronald Reagan. Brands is the author of the book Reagan the Life, as well as books about numerous other subjects such as Ben Franklin, Theodore Roosevelt, and Woodrow Wilson. We covered Reagan's early years as a politician, following his not-so-successful acting career in the movies and television. Ronald Reagan, we learned, rose to prominence as a potential national political figure when he gave an electrifying speech in support of Barry Goldwater during Goldwater's unsuccessful 1964 presidential campaign. David Rubenstein and H.W. Brand's conversation about Ronald Reagan continues. David Rubenstein, after 5 years of researching and working on Reagan to write your book about Ronald Reagan, do you admire him more or less now? H.W. Brands, well, I was a college student in California when Reagan was governor. Then I was teaching American history to high school students by the time he became president. Like a lot of other people, I was wondering where this Hollywood actor got whatever he got to make him as successful as he became. Some of it was natural. Okay, Reagan's an actor, and he knows how to read lines, and he knows how to give great speeches. That was the facile explanation for Reagan's success. But I realized eventually that I had really underestimated Ronald Reagan. You think of an actor as somebody who reads somebody else's lines. Reagan wrote more of his own lines probably than any other president since Woodrow Wilson, who wrote all of his own speeches. Reagan was intimately involved in the development of every important speech that he ever gave. Partly that was easy because he gave essentially the same speech again and again. From that first speech in 1964 right up until the end of his political career and his farewell address in 1989, it's the same message. The government is too big. It needs to be reduced in size. Communism is evil. It needs to be defeated. The rest was details. But the thing that I came to appreciate about Reagan was that he really did change the world. The Reagan book that I wrote was in some ways a sequel to a biography that I had written about Franklin Roosevelt. I concluded in the course of doing the research on Reagan that these were the two most important presidents of the 20th century. What Franklin Roosevelt was in the first half of the 20th century, Ronald Reagan was in the second half of the 20th century. In certain respects, each one tried to correct what he saw as an imbalance between the private sector and the public sector. When Roosevelt became president, the private sector amid the Great Depression was on life support, and it needed an injection of government energy. By the time Reagan became president, most American voters, at least the voters who first elected him, and the 60% of the American electorate who re-elected him again in 1984, concluded that the government had gotten too big. I teach undergraduates at the University of Texas. I boil things down for them. I say, in American politics, if you think that government is the solution, you're a liberal. If you think the government is the problem, you're a conservative. Rubenstein, let's go back to Reagan's beginnings. He grows up in Illinois. His father is an alcoholic. Not a very good provider, you would say. His mother is a bulwark of the family. He has an older brother, Neil. How did Reagan go from a small town, Dixon, Illinois, to Hollywood? What was his career path? Brands, when he was very young, Reagan discovered that applause, the laughter of audiences, could alleviate the anxieties of being the son of an alcoholic father, of being someone who didn't know whether his father on one day was going to be his best friend, and the next day was going to be utterly unreliable. His mother became the rock of the family. His mother, who was active in her church, the Disciples of Christ, took the younger child in the family, Ronald, Dutch as they called him, along with her to church. Rubenstein, so where did the nickname Dutch come from? brands. The family didn't have any money, so his mother would cut his hair by putting a bowl over his head and just trimming what the bowl didn't cover, so he looked like a little Dutch boy. That's the origin of that nickname. Reagan trailed along with his mother to those church events. Among the various events that his mother undertook at the church were plays and musicals and skits. Reagan was a cute kid. He was a good-looking kid. Something inspired her to put him on stage when he was just 4 or 5 years old. He got up there, and he did what cute kids did, and the audience applauded, and they laughed. Reagan, writing his memoirs at the age of 80, looks back and remembers how it felt. He said he could still remember the music of the applause. The reason Reagan went into acting was very similar to the reason he went into politics. He reflected on this again in his memoirs. Reagan said the reason a lot of people go into acting is precisely because when they're on stage, people will laugh and applaud. As uncertain as their personal lives might be, their lives on stage are very satisfactory because they get these positive strokes. He goes from Eureka College into radio. He intended to go to Hollywood from the time he was in college, but thought that was going to be a step too far. He said he wasn't willing to admit to his college classmates that he wanted to become a Hollywood star. To say instead that he wanted to go into radio, well, that was more acceptable. He's always looking for a bigger audience, first at these church performances, then his high school, then his college, then in radio. Then after a few years in radio, Reagan does a screen test and goes to Hollywood, and he's got a new audience. Rubenstein. So he's on the radio in Des Moines, broadcasting Chicago Cubs games. He isn't able to watch them, but he reads the ticker tape, broadcasts the games, and then goes with the team to California. He gets a screen test and gets hired. He's a handsome guy, a nice guy. Why did he not become Clark Gable or Earl Flynn? Why did he not make it to the top? Brands. Reagan interpreted it as a case of bad timing. He did okay. He did what B actors do. These were the days of B films. He did his introductory work, played in the farm league, so to speak. Just when he was going to hit the big time, just when he was going to make the major league, so to speak, World War II breaks out. That interrupts his Hollywood career. In fact, that wasn't it, really. The thing was that Reagan, and I'll backtrack a little bit to his childhood again, he grows up with his alcoholic father. The person on whom a son is most apt to rely, the one that he's likely to look to for modeling, what kind of person to be, is someone who's utterly unreliable. When I was writing the book about Reagan, I was on the tour for a previous book, and I did an interview with a radio host in Chicago. At the end of the interview, he asked a question that often comes up in these kinds of things. What's your next book? I said, I'm working on a book about Ronald Reagan. He put his hand over the microphone and said, as soon as we get off the air, there's something I need to tell you. I'm all ears. We get off the air, and he says, if you want to understand Ronald Reagan, you need to keep in mind that his father was an alcoholic. I didn't know exactly how to react to this bit of intelligence because I knew perfectly well that his father was an alcoholic. Reagan writes about it in his memoir. Was I supposed to be surprised? I didn't say anything, and I let him continue. And he continued and said, I speak as a son of an alcoholic father. He said, I will tell you that when you grow up in that kind of environment, you develop a kind of emotional shield around yourself, because this person that you want to look to for guidance, the person you want to lean on, the person you want to model yourself after, is quite unreliable. One day he's your best friend and he's telling you funny stories and throwing the ball around the backyard, and the next day he's beating the living daylights out of you. Now, this is not Ronald Reagan exactly, but you'll see where I'm going with this. I've done a lot of research on Reagan by the point, and I thought, I'm not going to take this guy's word for it that explains Reagan. But I was on the lookout for various manifestations of this mindset. One of them came from the memoir of Nancy Reagan. It's a wonderful memoir, in part because it's so candid. It's one of the most open and revealing memoirs of somebody in American public life written in the last 50 years. Nancy Reagan was Reagan's closest, I'm tempted to say only really close, friend. She was almost the sum of his emotional universe. But Nancy acknowledges in her memoir that there were times when even she didn't know what was going through his head and his heart, that this wall would come up and she just had to wait for it to come down again. Nancy realized that this was something deep within him, so this is part of the story. Another bit of evidence comes from Ronald Reagan's own memoir, describing a moment when he's walking home from an after-school activity at the YMCA in Dixon. It's in the winter, the temperature's below freezing, there's snow on the ground, it's starting to get dark. Reagan turns into the walkway leading up to the house and sees his father passed out in the snow. He says in his memoir, "And I stood there for a moment and I asked myself, what should I do? Should I simply walk on by and go into the house and leave him out there?" He doesn't spell this out, but the obvious conclusion is that he's thinking, okay, I'll just leave him there. He'll die in the snow. Reagan is writing this from a distance of nearly 70 years, and he still remembers this moment when he was just 11 years old. In the next sentence in the memoir, he says, "So I decided to pick him up and drag him." But for a kid that age to entertain that thought that his life might be better if his father were dead, that's a pretty heavy thing. This is what Reagan is trying to get away from by going into acting. Rubenstein. So he goes into acting. Reagan's a B actor, doesn't get to be Errol Flynn or John Wayne. World War II breaks out. He does training films and later becomes the head of the Screen Actors Guild. Why was he so involved in that guild? Brand, I didn't quite answer your question about why Reagan didn't become Clark Gable. This is my inference, and you have to take it for what it's worth. It's because Reagan was so reluctant to let down this emotional wall. If you're going to convey deep emotions as an actor, you have to have some place in yourself where you can go to feel that deep emotion. Reagan never let himself go there as an actor. So Reagan, by the mid-1940s, had reluctantly come to the conclusion that he was not going to make the top of the marquee. When Reagan announces he's going to run for governor, Jack Warner of Warner Brothers hears about it and says, "No, no, Jimmy Stewart for governor, Ronald Reagan for best friend." That was the kind of role that Reagan was good at. The leading roles, the ones you really have to dig deep, these are the ones he wasn't good at. He couldn't quite go there. Reagan realizes he's not going to make it as a top-level actor, so what else can he do in Hollywood? He discovered an interest in politics. First, he goes into the politics of the film business, which is how he gets involved in the Screen Actors Guild. Rubenstein. So Reagan becomes the head of the Screen Actors Guild for a while. In those days, he's an active, visible Democrat. He campaigns for FDR. He campaigns for Harry Truman. What converted him to being a Republican? Brands. One of the most difficult questions that I had to answer in writing the book on Reagan, and I'm not sure I quite got it, is how exactly to explain this. Reagan was a Democrat from his youth. I think of him as a legacy Democrat. He was a Democrat because his father was a Democrat. His father got a job as a low-level functionary in the New Deal at a time when the family really needed for his father to have that job. Like very many people who benefited from the New Deal, Reagan developed a certain kind of gratitude towards President Franklin Roosevelt, who was a Democrat. But there was more than that. Reagan grew up in the age of radio. His first job was in radio. Reagan was learning how to become a radio personality when Franklin Roosevelt was using radio to connect with the American people. I'm sure that at this time, Reagan had no notion that one day he would want to connect to American voters the way Roosevelt was connecting back in the 1930s over the radio. But he developed a respect and admiration for Roosevelt's ability to be president. Like a whole lot of people who inherit their political philosophy, Reagan hadn't thought seriously about the essence of it. He admitted, boasted sometimes, that he had voted for Franklin Roosevelt 4 times, but he never independently concluded that he agreed with Roosevelt's politics. It was Roosevelt's style of leadership that Reagan liked. That's part of it. The other part of it is that Reagan says he shifted from being a Roosevelt Democrat to being a Republican in the mid and late 1940s when the threat of communism was becoming more apparent in the country. He felt it in a personal way as head of the Screen Actors Guild. There were bitter union disputes in Hollywood at the time, and some of the unions were very clearly communist-oriented, if not outright communist-dominated. Reagan, in making various decisions on behalf of the actors that they would cross picket lines in these strikes, came under personal threat. He got a threat one day that said, "We're going to end your career if you persist in this." He didn't know exactly what this meant, but when he told the police about it, the police said, "What they do is they throw acid in your face and you're never going to get an acting job again." Reagan claims that was the beginning of his turn from being a Democrat to a Republican. That doesn't entirely wash because in the 1940s and 50s, the Democrats were fully as vigorous in opposing communism as the Republicans were. The Cold War was originally a Democratic project. Conservatives like Robert Taft, senator from Ohio, were the ones who were the laggards. The other thing was, I don't know exactly how much credit to give this, Reagan was making a good salary at a time when the top marginal tax rate on personal income was 90%. You don't have to be a raving reactionary to think that 90 cents of every dollar you make being taxed away is a bit much. So his agent, Lou Wasserman, gets Reagan a job as a host of General Electric Theater, which airs first on radio and then on TV. Does that make Reagan a little bit more conservative? He goes and talks to GE employees all the time, and the head of GE was a very conservative Republican. Brands? Reagan had had no particular interest or education in politics, and particularly in the policy side of politics, before he took this job with General Electric. He needed the job. He wasn't getting any film roles. He had played through his years as the president of the Screen Actors Guild. Reagan needs work, and GE's willing to hire him. This is an experiment in how to use television to market products back then, and the public face of General Electric is Reagan as a host of GE Theater. Every Sunday night on TV, Reagan spends 2 or 3 minutes introducing the made-for-TV play of the week. But Reagan spent the rest of the week traveling the country on behalf of the company. General Electric is writing his paycheck, and while it doesn't exactly tell him what he's supposed to say, people get influenced by the incentives they have and the work that they were conducting. Sometimes Reagan spoke to groups of GE employees. He's speaking on behalf of GE management and trying to convince the employees that they should avoid joining the trade unions. They should accept what management offers them. Reagan is being educated in this by some of the folks who work at General Electric. There's a coincidence between what works for Reagan in terms of his job and this dawning notion that the larger government enacted by the New Deal under Roosevelt is too big, and furthermore that these high tax rates are really hitting him in his pocketbook. It's a constellation of events that shifts Reagan in a rightward political direction. Rubenstein. So Reagan's TV career ultimately goes away as well, and he's not sure what to do next. He makes the speech in 1964 that you talked about, and then all of a sudden people say, "You should run for governor," and he decides to run in 1966. How did that campaign go? Brands. Reagan ran for governor of California primarily because he needed to do something before he ran for president. It wasn't that he really wanted to be governor of California. He was thinking bigger than that. In fact, when Reagan became California's governor, he had to educate himself on a lot of the issues that a governor of California has to deal with. But Reagan was thinking beyond that. In those days, anyway, you had to demonstrate that you could win elections before you got to run for president. Rubenstein. So in 1966, Reagan runs and is elected governor. He beats the incumbent governor, Pat Brown. Then in 1968, although he's only been governor for 2 years, he starts to run for president. Did he have a chance in 1968? Brands. This demonstrates that Reagan was thinking about the presidency all along. As I said earlier, on the morning after that speech in 1964, supporting Barry Goldwater, there were Reagan for President committees established around the country. He runs for president in 1968. He later would claim that he just ran as the favorite son from California, a placeholder so the state delegation wouldn't be caught out when they couldn't decide which of the major candidates then they should support. In fact, Reagan hoped that he would get the nomination in 68, but he was ahead of himself in two respects. One, he wasn't seasoned enough in politics to know what he was getting into. And number two, and this is really important in understanding the Reagan phenomenon and applies to the success of any individual president, has as much to do with the state of the country as with the character of the individual candidate. In 1968, the Republican Party was not in a position to nominate someone like Ronald Reagan, and the country was not in a position to elect a Ronald Reagan. If he had somehow gotten the nomination in 1968, it might very well have ended his career. But the fact is, he couldn't get the nomination then. He realized before going very far, they wasn't going to get very far, that the Republicans were going to instead nominate Richard Nixon, who ends up getting elected in 1968. That demonstrated that as late as 1968, in fact, as late as the 1970s, there was a substantial liberal wing still in the Republican Party. Now, Republican liberals don't call themselves liberals. They call themselves moderates. But if you look at the presidency of Richard Nixon, in many ways, it tracks the presidency of Lyndon Johnson, a Democrat. The country was not ready for Ronald Reagan in 1968, even if he had gotten the nomination. Rubenstein. So Reagan gets reelected as governor in 1970, and then his term is up in 1974. He then decides to run for president against the incumbent, President Gerald Ford. What chance did Reagan really have then? Why did it go so badly at the beginning, and how did Reagan turn it around? Brand. That Reagan would challenge an incumbent president of his own party demonstrated that Reagan realized or thought in 1976 this was his last chance. Rubenstein. Reagan was then 65, correct? Brands. Yes. He was old by political standards. It was now or never, he thought. Reagan, in various moments of his career, was able to convince himself that what he needed to believe was, in fact, right. He convinced himself that Ford was too moderate for the United States, that Ford was too squishy on detente, that Ford had never been elected president, and therefore was vulnerable to a challenge. Readers note, Gerald Ford became president when Richard Nixon resigned in August 1974. I can't disagree with that, and it certainly is what Reagan so believed. But he must have understood that in challenging Gerald Ford the way he did, he was taking a long shot on getting the nomination as president. Even if he did get it, he might have sufficiently divided the party that it would not have been worth it, and that by challenging and weakening Ford, he might prevent him from getting elected in his own right in 1976, which is exactly what happened. Rubenstein. So Reagan lost all the early primaries, then wins in North Carolina, wins other primaries, and moves forward. He announces that Senator Richard Schweiker of Pennsylvania would be his vice president running mate, thinking that it would help with the Pennsylvania delegation. It didn't really help. Brands, the lesson is that if you're running for president, don't announce ahead of the convention who you're going to choose for your vice presidential running mate. Rubenstein. So at the 1976 convention, Gerald Ford gets the nomination. Apparently, Reagan had said to somebody then, I don't want to be vice president on Ford's ticket. In your book that you wrote, you point out that Jim Baker, who later worked for Reagan as his White House chief of staff, was told by him at one point that if they offered him the vice presidential running mate slot in 1976, he would have taken it. Brands, this is a case where memories differ and the historian has to try to parse them out. I don't think Reagan would have taken the offer to be vice president if it had been offered him. He disagreed with most of Gerald Ford's policies, and he thought this was his last shot. When he didn't get the nomination in 1976, he basically went home and sulked in his tent. This alienated Ford and caused a lot of Republicans to think that this guy, for all he talked about loyalty and solidarity of the Republican Party, was not a very loyal Republican after all. Reagan challenges a Republican president, and then when he loses in that challenge, doesn't go out and campaign for him. Then Ford loses to Jimmy Carter, and the Ford camp held this against Reagan. Well, that's all the time we have today for the conversation about Ronald Reagan. We'll continue the conversation between David Rubenstein and historian H.W. Brands next week on President Ronald Reagan. This is Wallace Kleindienst, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'll be back with you next week for the next edition of American History. Thank you so much for listening.